In the UK, just over 13% are self-employed, a slight dip just before the pandemic when it was just over 15%. Is being self-employed the way forward, or are we forced to choose the path when certain industries are concerned? Or is this another way of paying precarious workers by employers without commitment of employment rights? Welcome to Debt Talk Podcast with me, your host, Rippon Ray. You may have guessed what I'm about to speak about. This time, it is the insecurities of being self-employed. To navigate this month's podcast, I have James Harris, who is in his early 50s and spent nearly 25 years in the creative sector as a self-employed person. Andy Chamberlain, Director of Policy from the Association of Independent Professionals and Self-Employed Limited. And finally, Sam Nurse, CEO of Money Advice Hub, who advises employed and self-employed individuals on their debts. So let me start with James Harris. James, tell me
Hi.
how you got into being self-employed. Was it by choice, or is it something you preferred because you personally prefer to work where you are in control of your work?
It's mostly the latter, because the way I work, I guess I'm quite stubborn in that being creative, you sort of take charge of your own projects and deliver. I mean, if you're working with a team, you're obviously delivering your aspect to a certain event or whatever the project is. But rather than being under the thumb of a company, like a design company or what have you, I have the freedom to be my own entity, if you like. Look, being in my own sort of individual approach and product, for want of a better word, to a project. So it naturally seems that I sort of fell into the category of being self-employed.
Have you noticed a change in the way the industry or funders work as time went on?
Fashion shows, for example, I did a lot of work producing music for those. Budgets have vastly been reduced, since the late 90s. So there's less work, but also less chance for being a bit more flamboyant with what you can do. The purse strings are tightened, so there's less scope for doing more things, and then less work as well. So I used to have regular seasonal work, depending on the amount of, like, sticking with fashion shows, there are two seasons a year, so I'd almost be guaranteed to have several projects to work on twice a year, and they sort of diminished simply because the way that everything's budgeted has changed. And people just don't have the money that we did have, let's say, 10 years ago. So that obviously makes things tough. And then when I am asked to do something, they expect me to do it for next to nothing, which is not which is unrealistic, because we all have spiraling bills to pay.
So then how are you managing the volatility of work?
Well, fortunately, the benefit system is there to support. I've been relying on that for a couple of years now. And that changed when working tax credits switched to universal credit to try and pull everything together, which on paper seems like a good idea, but in practicality, it certainly had some teething problems. And there are targets that we all have to meet, which sometimes seem a bit unrealistic.
So what sort of type of challenges have you faced when the benefit system is concerned?
Just struggling to live from month to month, because being freelance or self-employed, there's not a constant flow of work. There could be months when I'm really busy, I've got five projects on at once, and then there'll be a month with there's nothing at all. So it ebbs and flows a lot. So when the benefit system is trying to counterbalance that, the timings can be out, so I can have a month when I literally have no money at all to eat and to spend on food, rather. I don't need money. The bills are piling up, and then the next month money comes through, and of course it's eaten up by the bills that are now falling into arrears. So it's hard to keep a balance when things are so up and down, and I'm not sure that the benefit system quite accommodates that as well as it could.
I mean, you currently live in the East End of London in a council house, so what sort of problems the benefit system actually led you to having problem with your rent and other stuff? Tell us more about that.
I ran into, there were some problems where I ran into arrears, partly my own fault, but also about a year, because of the minimum income floor and the way that that works, I was receiving, I wasn't receiving any money at all, because the system assumes that, well, it was odd, because every month you have to declare your earnings as self-employed and your expenses, so in and out. They'll work out calculations based on the minimum income floor, which I think is $1,400 a month that they expect you to make. And if I was making under that, and I would admit to that, their calculations said that, well, you don't really owe you anything because you need to reach that amount. It's just really confusing. And yeah, so for a year, I really struggled because I wasn't being paid anything towards housing benefit, and also nothing for my day-to-day expenses. So that got me into a lot of trouble with a lot of creditors. Long story short, I challenged Universal Credit people, and finally they admitted they'd made some errors, and I received a back payment to cover those periods where they had admittedly made mistakes. It's still confusing, but I was pleased to get a small lump sum that could pay off what they should have paid. And they also sent a similar back payment to housing benefits, which then cleared my spiraling rent arrears. But I was already in trouble with the council, because they could see that my arrears were just getting out of control. I wasn't doing anything about it because I couldn't. So, I mean, this which added to a huge amount of stress.
So, I mean, would you say being self-employed is the way forward for you financially?
Yes, because I believe the work, I mean, I'm getting more work now. So I do have work coming in, but it's not as stable as having a place where you go every week, if you're working for a company.
Thank you, James. Let me get Andy Chamberlain, Director of Policy from the Association of Independent Professionals and Self-Employed Limited, into the conversation. Andy, you've heard about James and many things may resonate with you. Let me start with the benefits of flexibility and freedom that apply to being self-employed. Is that really the case from your experience, or is it based on the need of employers trying to avoid giving the right that workers want? Where does your organization stand on this?
Yeah, freedom and flexibility, they're probably the things that most people will most often say are the reasons that they like working for themselves. And they're the reasons why people go into it, including sort of better work-life balance and things, which sometimes doesn't always work out for them, by the way. Some people can find themselves working even more hours as self-employed. But it is that sense of not having a boss, of being able to pick and choose the work that you want to do, and not being tied into an organizational structure, not having perhaps to line manage other people is an advantage for some people, and not being line managed yourself. Sort of being very much the kind of like the in charge of your own little fiefdom is very, very appealing to most of the self-employed people that we work with. You mentioned also that, well, hang on a minute, is this actually just companies saying, do you know what, we don't want to employ people, because if we employ people, we have to give them all these, you know, terrible things like employment rights, which, by the way, a lot of companies don't mind doing that, I should say. But, you know, there's a narrative, isn't there, that some companies are trying to actually avoid what they should be doing, which is giving people rights by sort of saying, you're all self-employed, we're only going to work with self-employed people. I think that that's not as common as some people might think it is. And certainly for our members, because we're a trade association that looks after self-employed people, so most people that join us are quite positive about self-employment, so we possibly have a bit of a skewed view here. But I would say that There are some instances of that, and that is where we get into this world of so-called bogus self-employment. That is something that we should be making sure doesn't happen. People should be getting the rights that they're entitled to. And I'm sure that there are instances of that happening, but I think that overwhelmingly, if you look at the whole population of self-employed people, they have chosen it. And we just heard from James there, who talked a lot about some of the risks and the difficulties, but also, said at the start that, was looking for that freedom, that flexibility, etc. So most people do choose this, and sometimes, there are risks involved in it, but most of the time it's individuals making that choice. It's not foisted upon them. And although that might be happening, and I think it probably does happen, unfortunately, in some cases, it really shouldn't be. That's something the government should be getting a grip on.
In terms of, let's say, the difference between, let's say, the employee and self-employed, what are the fundamental differences between those two categories?
So legally speaking, then you've got, if you're an employee, there are certain rights and protections that you have. And these include things like unfair dismissal rights. Once you have done a certain amount of time working for an organization, they can't just decide to get rid of you for no good reason. By the way, the government is currently putting through the Employment Rights Bill, which is going to reduce that down. So they're going to have people are going to have day one rights around that sort of thing. You don't get that if you're self-employed. If you're self-employed and you're working with an organisation, they can turn around. It depends what's written in the contract, but ultimately they can just say, we no longer want to work with you. But by the way, you can too. You can also say, I don't want to work here anymore. And you can, this contract can be brought to a close pretty swiftly and cleanly. But that is a right that employees get. And self-employed people don't. And the others are things like holiday pay. So if you're an employee, then you get holiday pay. It's a statutory right, and it means that there will be some parts of the year where you can go on holiday, you'll still be paid. If you're self-employed, you don't get that. There's also sick pay rights, which are a little bit different, but basically apply much more generously to self-employed people that so to employees than they do to self-employed people. And there's things like maternity pay. If you have a baby, then if you're employed, you are guaranteed to get a better deal than if you're self-employed. But very often, good employers will also beef up the statutory minimum on that. So you're quite likely to be, it depends on your company, but it could be that you get quite a generous maternity package from your company if you're employed. If you're self-employed, you won't be getting that generous one. And actually, the statutory maternity allowance isn't even as generous as the statutory maternity pay, which it is for employees. So there's a few things in there, but essentially, you don't get rights when you're self-employed. There are a couple, health and safety rules apply to all. Or anyone working in an organisation. So you do have rights under health and safety law, and you have a right not to be discriminated against on the grounds of sexuality, race, and all those other categories that people can be discriminated on. You have the same protections whether you're self-employed or not there. But for pretty much everything else, you don't get the rights, and employees do.
Is there a group of people who are more likely to be self-employed? So, for example, younger workers, maybe, or as you've heard from James, within the creative sector, who are trying to get into the labour market, or maybe older workers who are seeking gradual phase towards retirement?
According to our own research at IPSE, 70% of self-employed people are over 40. And the 40 to 49-year-old category rose a bit last year. That went up by 7%. And the over 60s has been pretty steady, actually just went up by 1% last year. So that's where we're seeing the biggest numbers of self-employed people, is actually those older workers. Younger self-employment has gone down a bit. So if you look at 16 to 29-year-olds, that went down 10% last year. 30 to 39-year-olds, roughly about the same, slightly down the year before. So the current trend seems to be for less young people going into self-employment and more older people going into or staying in self-employment. And in terms of the occupations, then the biggest for all the years that we've been looking at this going back some time is construction. And after that, it is literary, artistic, and media occupations, which perhaps James sort of falls in broadly into that that category. So that's the second biggest grouping. So those are the sort of main categories. We also see quite a lot in hair and beauty, and agricultural and related trades around farming, etc.
Where does the Association of Independent Professionals and Self-Employed Limited fit into the industry?
So we are a membership organization, and our members all work for themselves. We were started in 1999, and we actually formed in opposition to a specific tax thing that was coming out around then, which some of your listeners may have heard of, called IR35. I don't want to get into that too heavily here, because for some people it's very, very boring. But we then evolved from that into being a sort of much wider organisation. We talk about a range of issues, and we represent the whole of the self-employed sector. But our sort of mission is to ensure that self-employment is an aspirational and sustainable career choice for those people that choose it. That's what we believe in.
So, has there been any major pattern that you've noticed when self-employment is concerned that you want to shed light on?
Yeah, so we, in the last decade, so the 2010s, we saw quite a steep rise in the numbers of self-employed people. It seemed to be precipitated by the financial crash at the end of the noughties. And we saw this big rise in self-employment. And it was driven not entirely, but very much largely by a huge increase in the number of women going into self-employment, which was quite interesting. So then we get to 2020 and we've got 5 million self-employed people in the country. I think, as you said in your introduction, that was about 15% of the total workforce. And then the pandemic hit and we saw that population decrease quite suddenly to around 4.2, 4.3 million. And it's sort of plateaued ever since. So even though the pandemic is, we hope, well and truly behind us now, we haven't seen those numbers increasing again in the same way that they were before. It's a little bit of a mystery as to why that might be, but that is the, that, and that there's different. There's people who speculate and they say, well, the pandemic reminded us how vulnerable we are. The pandemic was particularly hard on, it was very hard on lots of different groups, to be fair. But for self-employed people, if you didn't sort of manage to fall into the categories that enables you to get some of that support scheme money that was made available, and for some people, they just, through no fault of their own, they just didn't qualify for that. It was a very, very hard time. And perhaps that made people think that they were going to return more to the sort of relative safety of employment. But yeah, so we're just plateauing now about 4.2, 4.3 million.
And where do you see the major issues of risk from your experience, and what have you heard, and also from what you've heard from James?
Well, James's experience is hard to listen to, that period he was describing where he went through, where you've got, on the one hand, the work's drying up, and I don't know quite when that was, James, but obviously we have had that pandemic period where this was, so many different self-employed people. I mentioned that that one of the biggest groups is construction. So construction stopped happening in the pandemic. So it was very difficult for a lot of self-employed people to find the work. And then you've got a benefit system, and I think we're going to hear a bit more about this from Sam, your other guest, but a benefit system which effectively, this is quite a strong term, but it seems to discriminate against self-employed people because of this thing called the minimum income floor, which James was describing. It assumes that you've earned some money and tops up your entitlement on top of that, even if you haven't earned the money. It will just say, well, you must have done. And that is something that people who are not self-employed don't have to deal with. And so there are some real difficulties there.
If a person is considering joining the self-employment sector, what advice would you give them?
You should go for it, because a lot of people, we've done research on this, there's loads of people out there that think about doing it, but they never quite do it. But I would say, look, go for it. There is work out there, and there's lots and lots and lots of people who are making a very good career and have a good income stream out of self-employment. As James said, it can be a bit feast and famine. So you want to make sure you've got a few savings if you can, to make sure you can rough out those dips, sorry, smooth out those dips when you've got that, perhaps that income doesn't come in. But yeah, go for it. And then the key thing is, where's your first bit of work going to come from? Get that in the bag and then think about your next bit of work. Where's that coming from? And also maybe, and this won't work for everyone, but maybe you could do it as a side hustle. There's been a big rise in this thing called side hustle. So people have a income stream that might be, for example, an employment. Maybe you can do something in your spare time to get your self-employed business off the ground, and you can sort of test the waters without having to give up the security of your wage. So there's more tips I can give, but that's, I'd say, the first things you should think about. Where's the work coming from, and can I do this whilst keeping a bit of that safety blanket, either from savings or from other income?
Thank you, Andy. Speaking of advice, let me get Sam Nurse, CEO of Money Hub, that provides debt and money advice to self-employed, into the conversation to speak about money issues. As you can see, Sam, from James's experience, money is a huge issue. I get there is no one size fits all, but what are the major issues that result in many self-employed seeking advice from your organization?
Hi, Ripple, and thank you very much for inviting me to your podcast. There are a lot of issues that will come across from self-employed people, including not making a profit, low income, struggling to find work is a big issue, can't afford essentials. A lot of the time, they have very basic bookkeeping skills, sometimes no bookkeeping skills, and that leaves them sometimes with HMRC fines and very messy accounts. So there's a whole cacophony of issues there that we come across.
What are the issues that self-employed may seek help or hinder addressing their debts if they want to remain self-employed?
One of the biggest issues that I find is the variance in the income. It's so sporadic, and our traditional forms of calculating a budget and presenting those to creditors are a standard of monthly income, and that is just not the case with self-employed people. It fluctuates, and it's very difficult to present any offers or present a situation, even to assess a formal debt solution with such a varied income. The other issues that we come across with debt solutions are that sometimes it's not practical for that self-employed person to look at a debt write-off solution, and that's because A, they may need to have access to valuable trade accounts so that they can carry on trading, and they don't want to lose credit lines for that, and B, that they may not be able to tender for contracts if they can't satisfy the status tests that are required. So it could be, it doesn't have to be a large self-employed employer, sorry, self-employed person. It can be a plumber who may want to tender for a local authority contract and would need to show that they had a good status. So that's another issue that we come across.
How do creditors, though, actually see self-employed people? Are there any technical issues that we need to consider?
I mentioned that the presentation of the budget makes it very difficult. There's very little understanding of the restraints that self-employed people have with their budgets. A lot of creditors now, due to the Consumer Duty, are giving forbearance, and of course, we have the tools in our armory of the breathing space now, which is helpful. So there is some sort of forbearance there from creditors, but in the main, it's just very difficult to draw up a budget. It's not even the creditors per se, it's actually the process of debt advice is not very aligned really with a self-employed person's situation. It's very difficult for them to budget, as we heard earlier, but also very difficult for debt advice. Another issue I would say that I come across is that we can't even contemplate looking at a formal debt solution if they have messy accounts. We have to make sure that they're all filed up to date, and that can be a huge barrier to moving them on with a debt solution.
James mentioned about minimum income floor, so did Andy. You must come across an overlap between the benefit system and working for yourself. And what are the major issues require resolving?
Well, there are lots of issues with universal credit and self-employment. One of them is not just the minimum income floor, but you can be refused universal credit on the basis of self-employment if you're not considered to be gainfully self-employed. So they do tests to make sure that you've got the qualifications to do the self-employed role, and whether you're advertising and whether you're really being responsible. I have had clients that have been refused the universal credit on the basis that they weren't considered as gainfully self-employed. The issue with the minimum income floor is a massive one. It does seem like a penalisation of self-employed people. One of the things I would say that's good news is if somebody is migrating over from legacy benefits such as tax credits and they're self-employed, they do benefit from the transitional protection. So if anyone has a rollover letter to universal credit, make sure you do it in time just to get those transitional protections in place. For somebody newly self-employed, there's a 12-month lead-in period when the minimum income floor isn't applied. And of course, in COVID, when people were hard strapped, there was a kind of like a curfew on it where nobody had the minimum income floor applied. But what it does is it kind of puts in place a situation where you have to be earning or taking home a certain amount of money before you will be topped up, and you're penalized if you don't earn that money. The principle behind that, it does sound very, very unfair, but the principle behind it from the government's perspective is that you shouldn't be self-employed running a business if you can't make a living out of it. And the government doesn't want to support people and fund people running businesses that don't work out. That may sound harsh, and there's another side of that, another dimension, which is we all know, if you've ever been self-employed, I have, that when you run a business, it can take 2, 3, 5 years before you make a profit. And there seems to be no sort of value in the entrepreneurialism and the enterprise that is required to start up a business. And there are lots of successful businesses out there that took at least 5 years before they made a good profit. So I think it's throttling the self-employed community. And a lot of the people I speak to resonate with the other speakers, which is they really value self-employment. It's useful for them. They don't want to give it up, but they're forced into it because they can't make ends meet and there isn't a benefit system that meets their requirements.
Thank you, Sam. For those who are listening to Debt Talk podcast and want to share your experience, you can get in touch with me on X, Your Dr. Debt, or email me ripon.ray@yourdrdebt.com. Let me go back to my panel members to speak about top tips they can offer to Debt Talk listeners who are either thinking of becoming self-employed or struggling whilst being self-employed. Let me go to Andy Chamberlain, Director of Policy from the Association of Independent Professionals.
Thanks, Ripon. Yeah, I think top tips wise, I've already sort of said this one, but it's all about where's your first bit of work coming from? If you're thinking of going into this new, have a look at that. And you know, is it going to pay you enough so that you can meet your bills, etc., particularly if you're going to give up a wage? Or could you possibly do it on the side? That is what more and more people are doing. It's not always going to work for everyone, but that is what quite a lot of people are doing. They start off as a side hustle, and if it takes off, then you can eventually make that your main income source. The next one I would say is make sure you put aside a bit of money for tax. Depending on how much you earn, 25% might be enough, 30% would be nice. Make sure you put that away to one side, because it's if you've been employed all your life, you're used to just paying tax at source, so you've never really had to worry about it. When you're self-employed, it's something that you have to do sort of retrospectively, quite often quite a long time after you've earned the money. So make sure you put aside some of that. And also, just to pick up on something else that James said earlier, where he said, you know, quite often he finds that he's expected to work for nothing or can have difficulty in getting paid. This is a very big problem for self-employed people. And so make sure that you set your rates at a competitive but reasonable rate, and make sure you understand who it is in the organization that you're going to talk to and send your invoice to, and try to form a bit of a relationship with them. And if you are paid late, you should know that you can charge interest. There's more info on our website around this, ipse.co.uk, but you can charge interest. And make sure that you do so. So just stay on the case on getting paid, because that can be one of the downsides to self-employment, is not all clients will pay you promptly and swiftly. Some of them need a bit of chasing. So there's a bit of an art form in that. So I'd say get used to doing that.
Lovely. And finally, Sam Nurse, CEO of MoneyHub.
Thanks, Rippon. I would... say the same thing about having a buffer to afford tax liabilities, and also a plug for the Help to Save scheme, which is eligible for self-employed people. You get a little bit of money back if you're saving under that scheme. It's a government scheme. That's a really good way of getting a return on those small savings. Try very hard to learn good bookkeeping skills. Get a free Google account maybe and use Google Sheets. It's very easy to do bookkeeping on those, and try to formulate a cash flow forecast. If you ever go for any lending, you'll need to say what your cash flow forecast is, and that helps you think about the future and what you can afford to spend. Try to keep on top of the reporting in Universal Credit. That can be a problem if you don't keep up with that. And a really a very big top tip that I speak to a lot of my clients about is understanding all the free tech that's out there. So one of the biggest disadvantages of the small-time self-employed person is they don't have a lot of money behind them, and they're not sometimes tech savvy. And if you're going to remain competitive in procuring work, even if it's just a window cleaner down your street, you need to keep your costs sharp and make use of advancing technology before you get consumed by people that do know tech and the big players. So that's a very big thing to attract work. Make sure you use social media, all the free tools that are out there that can help you. If you do get a rollover migration letter to Universal Credit and you're self-employed, for goodness sake, do it in time, because you're going to get those 12 months transitional protection, which is really important to avoid that minimum income floor. And really, just really understand the benefit system. Understand that you cannot sit there not making a profit, self-employed. Plan for that. As long as you understand that, then it won't be a culture shock to you. We're now quite a way past tax credits. Tax credits was much more generous. But this is the new regime, Universal Credit. I don't think it's fair, but... that's what we have to advise on, and that's the reality of the situation.
Thank you. I want to thank my panel members for giving their valuable and precious time out of their busy schedule to speak on the subject, the insecurities of being self-employed. My next podcast is on food banks and welfare support. Thank you for listening to Debt Talk Podcast with me as your host, Rippon Ray.